freeing oneself from material desire is necessary, but also to keep the mind in that condition, to keep your heart in that condition, you have to be directed by intelligence. A higher order of intelligence than simply how to make money, or how to fix a car, or how to do some technological thing. Bought a new TV monitor. We don't know how to make it work. Not working properly. So if we can get the technician to tell us, to come here and show us, or we can take it to him and he can repair it so that it works. But that's not to say that technician, because he knows that he has that kind of material intelligence, that the man is completely peaceful, calm, and tranquil being. Who knows how many disturbances such an individual experiences in the course of his day. It's another order of intelligence that's required to keep the mind very peaceful. Not how many things do you know. Or even for individuals pursuing spiritual life. It's not a matter of how many verses you know, or how many books you've read, or how many facts you've memorized. It's a matter of, as it's being described, a condition where one is so... You will place yourself just on, in a very dependent way, helplessly at the mercy of God, and being completely prepared to follow God's direction. It's a devotional attitude in relation to a higher order of consciousness, God consciousness, of God within the heart, of God in the form of the instructions that come from the scriptures. A higher order of intelligence. One who is willing to be guided by that higher intelligence, one is willing to be disciplined to submit your mind to that higher discipline, just like the next verse describes, from whatever and wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. The self is again that higher intelligence. We call this our phrase for this, I don't know if everybody else uses the same phrase, but in our temples, in Krishna consciousness, we call it spacing out. Common sense also. Everyone needs. Someone just sitting and spacing out. Mind's going zooming all over the creation. So this verse is applicable. Instead of letting the mind simply run all over, like a dog that's on a leash, just bring it back. Under the control of the self. So you can say higher intelligence is required, because the mind is going all over. As soon as you can recognize that your mind is in that condition where it's flickering, glittering here and there, bring it back by use of higher intelligence. The mind should be engaged in some higher activity than this other activity. But that behind that intelligence, there's also a person. And ultimately, that person is the Supreme Person. If it's the best intelligence, then it's from the Supreme Person. It may even be transmitted through another person, through some representative of the Supreme Person. But that's the representative of the Supreme Person is not manufacturing their own... If they're a representative, they're not manufacturing their own idea. Just like a postman comes and delivers you your mail in the morning. The postman's business is not to open your mail up and read your letter and start doing his editing work and seal it back up and then hand it to you. The postman would get fired real quick. He might think it's pretty funny, but he wouldn't keep his job for very long. But the business of the postman, the duty of the postman, is simply to deliver from the sender to the receiver the message intact on time. and he's a good person. Same for someone who is speaking messages on behalf of the Supreme Intelligence, the Supreme Being. The business is just to repeat it, just to transmit it without editing, without leaving something out, without crossing words out, because you don't happen to put the same amount of value in those words as the person who originally presented the words, or superimpose some other idea or set of words on top of it. So yoga practice means developing that kind of discipline. And sometimes, actually almost always, we don't like, at least there are certain areas that we don't like to be disciplined. Like some people say, I don't mind this and that. I was just having a discussion with one guest this evening, or this afternoon. And this guest was saying, they remembered a lecture that Swami Krishnaraj was giving. He was asking for a show of hands. So how many people have been following our movement for some number of years? And they raised their hands. And how many of you have been chanting 16 rounds a day? How many of you have been chanting 8 rounds a day? At least minimum. Many people. How many of you have been offering all your food to Krishna? So many hands. And how many of you have been free from the other principles like gambling? Almost everybody, not gambling. And then when it came to the last principle, he said they were falling. I won't even ask how many of you follow me this intoxication and illicit sex principle, because you might be embarrassed to be unable to raise your hand. So we can discipline, as the verse was describing that we read, we may be able to accept some discipline in certain ways. Just to walk across the room, you have to accept some discipline. You have to discipline your mind in some way. I've had this personal experience of getting malaria in India. And one of the things that malaria does, it affects your mental faculties to the point that you just can't control them. So some people, when they get completely feverish, they just become delirious. They begin imagining and hallucinating all kinds of things and completely lose control of your... The simpler thing is being able to direct your thoughts, you can't do it. So if somebody has some tendency towards madness, they just really go way out. I can remember sitting, because one of the things that you're supposed to do when you have malaria, you're supposed to drink water. So I was sitting there trying to do my best to drink water. And I can recall this very vividly, just having to think for about 5 minutes to reach my arm out to take the cup and drink the water. Just to get my thought pattern together long enough to do that was pretty difficult. And then after drinking enough, finally after drinking enough water, my bladder was getting ready to burst. And I was so I just had to walk across the room, like 8 steps into the bathroom. And I sat there for about a half an hour trying to get it together to get my mind to tell my body to go walk across the room. And definitely the pushing was there to do it. But my mind just wasn't working. And I was in a state of delirious fever. Even so, my point is, even in ordinary things, just, you know, bring the spoon to your plate and put the food in mouth, even if your motor functions are working properly, still you have to have some mental discipline to do even ordinary things. So similarly, to do spiritual things, to do transcendental things, you have to have mental discipline. And the element that disciplines the mind is this higher order of spiritual intelligence. Now, some people are very unfortunate, and they don't have access to that higher order of spiritual intelligence. In part, it has something to do with their own desire. They don't want it. They'd rather live in some other way. They'd rather live in an undisciplined way, or they'd rather live like an animal that completely has no requirement for discipline. In that case, even in the animal forms of life, the modes of nature dictate. For example, in lower life forms, they can only eat like a tiger. He'll eat, I believe, something like once a week. And, you know, a whole herd of deer can go prancing before the tiger. He's just eating a meal, he just will let it pass. And then after everything is nice and digested, and then he gradually starts getting hungry, then he'll start thinking about his next meal. He doesn't go and, you know, grab about 10 of the deer and put them in the refrigerator. And then wait till he's again hungry again, and then he'll not start cooking it up. Thaw it out. Only when he's hungry. Or by nature's arrangement, it will regulate the mating season or the spawning season or the... But in the human form of life, we don't have that nature-imposed discipline in the same degree, at least. We have far more license for our senses, for our ability to move and to work and to mate and to defend. Certain animals will only defend at a certain point. I mean, they may be on the, like the bird will be on the watch all the time for some danger, but they won't really get into a fighting situation unless it's really absolutely necessary. Then they really have at it till the death, practically. So for lower forms of life, discipline is imposed harshly. There's one film, I don't know if any of you have seen it, it's called Atasha. It's put together by devotees, and basically it's just showing, it's worth seeing, it takes about a half an hour, but it just shows the fierceness of nature. You know, people think that be in harmony with nature and peacefulness and tranquility of nature, but it's, you start to get down to looking at how different species of life interact with one another. It's not so pretty. This whole film is just showing that. Survival of the fittest for a good reason. Because it's brutal. When nature imposes, the lower life form acts without consideration of morality or how it's affecting another person's sensibilities, another living entity's sensibilities. If they're ready to eat something or pounce on something, or they'll do it. So human form of life has to be disciplined in another way, by a higher order of spiritual intelligence. Because if that's not there, then one will become degraded to an animal condition of life while in this human body, and following that will take an animal body and be disciplined in another way. Yoga practice means to voluntarily take on some kind of discipline so that the material condition of life can be removed. Vedas describe that that's the purpose of human life, to reach self-realization. Whether microorganisms are living in the earth or these potted plants, they're also hearing this sound vibration. But they don't have the capacity to act on it like the human beings in this room. Or the microorganisms floating in the air, or whatever, you know, cockroaches or whatever, walls that are in the wall here. A bunch of dogs. Some cats that were living here, they may have benefited from taking prasadam and hearing the kirtan, but they're not about to reach the same point of self-realization as the tenants, at least I hope so. Same capacity is not there. The same responsibility is not there. So one has to accept discipline. So I was making the point that one may be willing to be disciplined in certain areas, but not willing to be disciplined in other areas. And that's not then one's yoga practice will not progress very smoothly. The previous verse, text 24, mentions this point. One should engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith, and not be deviated from the path. Same idea is repeated in the next sentence, practice is speaking. One should abandon, without exception, all material desires born of mental speculation, and thus control all the senses on all sides by the mind. I may be walking along a path very nicely, going in a certain direction, but I can be deviated this way, or that way, or some other way, if I still have some desire. This is described when the yogi leaves his body. They leave from the soft spot on the top of the skull. And the skull is shooting towards their next destination. Now, if they're fully qualified transcendentalists, then they'll go directly to the spiritual sky. But there's some testing in between. That if they have some desire, as they're passing by the higher planets of the universe, if they have some desire even to do a little sightseeing, I wonder what that planet is like. They take birth there. That desire conditions the soul to the point that it gives one the physical body to carry out the desire. The physical body that we have is to match the desire that we have. Or from the subtle, the grosser manifestations come. So desires condition us. So one should, what the verse is describing is that the material desires that we have, we should recognize, whatever they may be, whatever category or variety or whatever they may be, they're springing from false ego and from material conception of life. From desire, false ego meaning desiring to enjoy through matter or sense gratification. If I sift matter through my senses, and I'm supposed to come up with enjoyment. That's the calculation of the false ego. I'll come up with a piece of gold and I can enjoy. That's the expectation that material desires have behind them. So the yogi learns how to become, when those material desires come, first become free from desires as far as possible. And when those desires arise, to recognize them. Aha. Caught you again. Another misconception of how to enjoy material energy through these senses, through this body, it won't work. And in this way, to control and discipline the mind, because the desire will come again and again. As long as the heart is not completely pure, so many desires will come. And how to deal with it? So we may be willing to accept discipline in certain areas, but those areas that we're not so willing to be disciplined in, those are the ones we should even be more concerned about. Because they're the ones that are the ropes, the anchors that are keeping us in the material condition of life. Where unwanted suffering and misery go on. Who wants to suffer? Who wants to be miserable? Or we're holding on to those things that keep us filled with suffering and miserable. It's really stupid. It's less intelligent, for sure, to keep doing something that you know is giving you misery and suffering. It's like sawing away at your arm or something. Well, excuse me, sir, but don't you think that you should stop sawing away? Oh, yeah, I should stop sawing away my arm. Yeah, you're right. And just keep doing it. But you're bleeding all over the place, sir. Come, sir, please. Let me take that knife away from you. No, it's all right. I'll get tired of it after a while. We hold these bodies very precious, therefore it's kind of inconceivable that somebody would do something like that to their arm. Just saw it off. Just keep sawing away, the little limb drops. The body is too dear to us. So it's kind of inconceivable. But actually far more dear than the body, because after this one drops, we're going to get another one. Let me put on a plastic one. But the condition of the soul is far more dear, but that's actually us. The body is not us. The condition of the soul is. So it's a very reasonable thing to accept discipline for our mind. So we can do those things that we need to do. Discipline the mind in order to eat proper foods. Discipline the mind in order to relate properly with other people, so we're not making complete havoc by our mere presence in society, in social dealings. We certainly accept discipline of our mind in that way. In so many categories, we're accepting discipline. So those remedies that are being recommended for the yogi to practice, they also should be accepted. With careful understanding, careful study, but they should be accepted. And highest above all, not just accept, because this is describing the principle of mental discipline, but ultimately, when one reaches a purified stage, one is doing all these things spontaneously. In a condition of loving relation with the Supreme, the regulations and rules of discipline are no longer required. One is not obliged to follow the rules and regulations of the scriptures when one is on the platform of love of God. But the reason one is not required is because one is already doing it spontaneously. Just like the doctor giving a prescription, eat certain foodstuffs because they'll help make you healthy. But when you're healthy, it's not that then you stop eating those healthy foods and eating, you know, garbage junk foods again. Very non-healthy, and start eating whatever greasy, oily, crazy thing, butter, vending machine. Whatever. The very same foodstuffs that made me sick and sick of the dog. I'm going to go back to eating again. Now they're healthy. One loses the taste for those unhealthy things once one is healthy. And how many people who are now vegetarians can even stand the thought of not being vegetarian? It's just repulsive to even think about it for 30 seconds. Because you now have another taste. So I don't know how many times I've heard from people, give me that good red meat. And they know that we're vegetarians, or they, when we present our literature, they know that it stands for stopping eating. And just in part their nastiness, but also their nastiness is an indication of what they're eating. They get some special happiness out of, in a grisly way, saying how much they like the red meat. They can't even think about living without it. But you can live without it with some discipline. And once you're free from that, by that discipline, you can't, it's such a relief, you can't even consider doing with it. And same, the mental discipline that's required for yoga practice may be initially a little, at least in certain categories, a little unwanted. But you should take it like the medicine that is prescribed by a physician. And you know the physician is right. then you take the medicine to cure your disease. If not, then you remain diseased. It's not this, like this, the high concept we were talking about earlier. In those areas that you can't really discipline yourself, don't worry. Because it'll all just, God's very kind, and you just don't have to work on that one. Just try to be a good person, and all will work out and wash. That concept is not described here. So, part I'm going on a little bit late and long because I haven't heard about it at any time. Galloping up the stairs with the shaman. It's late, right? Okay, so, are there any questions? Or things that you'd like to discuss on this? We usually have so many questions. We haven't been having so many questions yet.
Well,
there's a person in the Rabbi Hida that says that unless you lose his conscience, it's stolen our material desires, which you can never have. There's another one at the end that says that there's an abode of goodness, which you can never have. How can you reconcile the verses?
Can you show me where the second reference is? I know the first one.
Yeah, it's in the chapter 17, text 1.
Well, the knowledge that's being described in the first case is the position of transcendental knowledge. Shuddha Sattva. Because the alternate, in this chapter 17 that you're referring to, it describes the different, as a title in case, divisions of faith. Those people in the Lord of goodness, what do they do? In compassion, what do they do? And ignorance, how do they manifest natural quality of faith that we all have? Because you have to have faith in something. So, those that are in the mode of goodness, they'll worship the demigods. Those that are in the mode of passion, what is the description? They worship the demons, and those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits. So, the knowledge in the previous verse that you're referring to means the transcendental knowledge, or Shuddha Sattva. Do you understand the difference between Shuddha Sattva and Sattva?
No.
No. Sattva means also mixed with passion and ignorance. Those persons who are in the mode of goodness, material goodness, also have a lesser quantity, also traces of passion and ignorance. Whereas Shuddha Sattva means complete Sattva. Total goodness, without any trace of passion and ignorance. Because in this same chapter that I was reading from, one of the verses that I skipped, it describes, in describing one who is free from material desires, it also says, free from the mode of passion. Meaning, Shuddha Sattva. Free from passion and ignorance. Shuddha Sattva. That's the yogi, or transcendentalist. So, one whose higher intelligence is stolen away, they'll not worship God. Rather, it's kind of seen in the army. In the mode of, if one's vision of God is being blocked because of passion and ignorance, one will then want very quick fulfillment of desire, meaning material desire. One will desire materially. Well, as soon as your desire, as soon as your condition of heart is, I want gratification, quick, then one's vision of God is blocked. By that desire, the curtain of Maya drops. And passion and ignorance start coming into play. And higher spiritual intelligence is lost. Passion, and followed from passion, ignorance.
how can one work to bring about it and put the mode of goodness in that path of material desire?
One is in the mode of goodness, that is a material desire. How not? You're thinking, the only reason you can't understand, you're having difficulty understanding, is if you're thinking goodness means spiritual, but it doesn't. One who is in the mode of goodness will also take birth again. No, because the person in the mode of goodness also wants sense gratification. Because there's also a mixture of goodness, but they're going about it in a more elevated way. That's all. The desires are more subtle. The kind of sense gratification that somebody in the mode of goodness wants is different than the kind of sense gratification that somebody in the mode of passion wants. And that's different also than the person in the mode of ignorance. But they share one thing in common, sense gratification.
So even
here in the mode of
goodness, you just say, I don't have no desire to spend. Okay. That can be. So that's not like a symptom of the mode of passion.
Passion is mixed in with goodness. Your analysis is right. Passion is mixed in. Yes. Mode of goodness means predominantly, but also the others. Passion, one who is in the mode of passion means predominantly one, but also mixed in the others. Oh no. You won't find that. Not in this material world. Exclusively one only. Predominantly one, yes. Mixed in with the others. Before the material world comes into play, yes. Before the living entity comes embedded into the field of the material energy, yes. Your unmixed condition. As soon as the living entity is there, desiring mixture. The different varnas are characterized by, for example, the Brahmana is described as in the mode of goodness. The Kshatriya is principally in the mode of passion. The Vaishya is passion and ignorance. And Shudra is principally ignorance. But if you find that condition of pure goodness, that's transcendental life. The transcendentalist will not accept another material body. But the person in the mode of goodness will. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purnan Arvartanarjuna. From the highest material planet down to the lowest, all the places of suffering wherein repeated birth and death take place. Up to the topmost material planet. In the mode of goodness as far as you can go. Again, another body. Why? Because there's passion. Desire for sense gratification, also mixed. Desire for gratifying one's false ego, also mixed. Good news. So get into your body.
So what kind of desire do you have for the world of goodness?
Philanthropy. Self-sacrifice for the benefit of others. Cultivation of knowledge. And is it kind of sense gratification, subtle sense gratification that goes along with that. Austerity, charity, mercy, truthfulness, simplicity. And there's a certain type of false ego that goes along with all of that. A sense of pride. isn't it? Sense of well, a false, from, Krishna describes it as a false sense of well-being, a false sense of superiority above others who don't have that knowledge, who don't have that quality of charity. The self-righteous kind of brings contamination. That's the, even, maybe there only in phrases it's there. The moralist who goes out of his way to sacrifice for the little old lady across the street with him. Or whether it's that or going to some place and opening a hospital. There's that sense of false egoistic pride. As opposed to the condition of pure goodness, where one does not even consider, other than what is the desire of God? Let me do that. For that purpose, and that purpose alone. Without even any trace of the will. What is the desire of God? That's a rare condition of life to achieve, to be sure. But that is the distinction. So one was practicing, for example, one is practicing devotional service. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, it describes devotional service and devoted passion, devotional service and devoted ignorance, devotional service and devoted goodness, and unalloyed love of God. The topmost standard of quality is unalloyed love of God. That's described earlier in the Bhagavatam, and later on in this third canto is elaborated upon. Ahoy tukya pratyatam yatma supersedity. Sarai pum sam karo dharmo kato bhakti raho kutya. Our hopes again. Ahoy tukya pratyatam yatma supersedity. Sukadeva Goswami is describing. What is pure devotional service? What is that condition that is Shruta Sattva? Where one serves God, because the person in the mode of goodness can also, at least express, I'm serving God. But what if they want something? They have some motivation. So pure devotional service means without motivation. I mean, can you think of an action that doesn't have some purpose behind the action? That's pure devotional service. Now, simple laws of physics say that this mridanga isn't going to get up and start walking around. There has to be some force applied to it. To move matter, it requires some force. So what is the force that will move your life? If you cannot identify any motivation, that's pure devotional service. And there's nothing that will stop it. That's another. Ahoyitaki, a pratyata. There's no material obstacle or roadblock that you can put in the way of pure devotion that can stop the force of pure devotion. Nothing. But it's transcendental. It proceeds without anything interrupting it. The greatest of dangers, anything you can think of. Just like in the case of Bhagavad Gita, the loss of kinsmen, the risk of all the risks that Arjuna was enumerating. Krishna was saying, sounds pretty wise and learned, but you're on the wrong platform. It sounds like the word of goodness. Go to the woods, become a mendicant. Give up all this trouble. Just become very pure and simple-hearted. So you want to get your question answered?
Does Brahma have material desires?
Yes. That's a difficult question to ask. He is susceptible. He's also the founder of our Sampradaya. But there are examples found in the Bhagavatam where he is also susceptible. His position as pure devotee is made very clear in that directed by his pure devotion for Krishna, even in that very rare situation where he becomes susceptible, he becomes directed to correctly. When Krishna makes the arrangement for him to be again properly situated, he accepts the correction from Krishna, and he comes again properly situated. Because of the quality of his devotion. Any more discussion, please?
Good
you say that when you told them you were here for the first time, have you been here before? In the Oilers?
Sure.
You've been here before?
No.
What's your name?
Bill.
Yeah. And yours?
Casey.
Casey. Have you been here, Casey?
Yeah.
You able to follow everything?
I've been to other countries. I haven't been there.
Oh. Where else have you been? Brooklyn?
Brooklyn.
Oh, over at Eastern. Uh-huh. But you still able to follow? No? Yes? A little bit? Mostly?
Yeah.
Either of you have any questions? Every day the devotees are going out from the temple chanting. The Khan tells them about that in the city. Very nice opportunity. Some guests have been coming. Bhajananda is inviting everyone. Bhajananda is the devotee who led the kirtan on Sunday. This yesterday evening in the temple. If any of you were there, you know how nice this kirtan is. He goes out every day for 4 hours, somewhere in the city. And just chant up and down the street. So, the guests are coming to take part, and something is very easy that anybody can, including me, it's very extended. Because this chanting of God's name, this is a prime benediction for humanity, for this age. Vedic literature, written 5,000 years ago, it predicts all the governmental corruption and degradation of society that's going on. You know, anybody with their eyes halfway open can see and figure out. But after giving all this description, it also gives the relief, like in the blasting heat of the summer in the middle of the desert. If there's a little oasis, then that's the only place you can get some refreshment or get some relief from the blasting heat of the sun. So in the same way, in this present age, we can go on and on and describe the ills, bad things that people do and the bad things the government cheats people on and so on, how people cheat each other.
Thank you.
read through a few verses. Chapter 6, verse 20. Our cover book on page 623. Excuse me. 19, because there's a whole section that's describing how mental discipline
Text 18.
Read the whole chapter. 327. When the yogi, by practice of yoga, disciplines his mental activities and becomes situated in transcendence, devoid of all material desires, he is said to be well established in yoga. This is mental discipline is part of any yoga practice. There are different ways by which the mind is disciplined. In particular, for dhyana yoga, it's very rigid mechanical process that's described earlier. The practice is described earlier, now the principle is being described. And the same principle applies for any yoga practice. For devotional yoga, which Krishna consciousness is presenting, bhakti yoga. And also for the philosophical yoga systems. If someone is going to be a philosopher, then has to have very strong mental discipline. Practically speaking, for even karmic activities, for someone to be a successful businessman, lawyer, doctor, musician, teacher, there has to be also mental discipline. And specifically, yoga teaches how that mental discipline can bring the mind to a position of transcendence or in contact with that which is beyond the field of material energy. It mentions specifically in the verse, devoid of all material desires. So we'll read the point. The activities of the yogi are distinguished from those of ordinary person by his characteristic cessation from all kinds of material desires, of which sex is the chief. The perfect yogi is so well disciplined in the activities of the mind that he can no longer be disturbed by any kind of material desire. This perfectional stage can automatically be attained by persons of Krishna consciousness, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll just read the translation. King Amrish first of all engaged his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. Then, one after another, he engaged his words describing the transcendental qualities of the Lord, his hands in mopping the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing in the activities of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the transcendental forms of the Lord, his body in touching the bodies of the devotees, his sense of smell in smelling the scents of lotus flowers offered to the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaf offered at the lotus feet of the Lord, his legs in going to the places of pilgrimage and the temple of the Lord, his head in offering obeisances unto the Lord, and his desires in executing the mission of the Lord. All these transcendental activities are quite befitting of pure devotee. This transcendental stage may be